Welcome back, everyone. What the fuck? Why is it such a hard cutout from the music? Welcome back, everybody, to what one listener has deemed the most under-advertised podcast on the internet, and that's very true. I don't promote like I should, but the numbers are good. So why promote? Why fuss when all y'all are so dedicated to hearing my horrible Midwest teeth sucking voice on a semi now monthly basis, it seems. So I appreciate y'all. I'm coming to you live-ish from beautiful Jacksonville, North Carolina, where I have PCS'd officially from Houston, Texas, and I'm done with recruiting, and I don't think I've ever been happier. The government move, and I could do a whole fucking podcast on the nightmare and weirdness that is essentially free government labor. I mean, they take the lowest bidder, and it's fucking terrible, but survive that. But almost didn't survive the trip out of Houston. The house was all packed up, and I was on an air mattress with a TV on the floor, and I was like, you know what? One more night in the house on the air mattress, play some video games, DoorDash one last time, then fucking hit the road early and knock out some miles. Because I had to drive all the way from Texas to the first major stop was Virginia to drop off this dog before I went up to Rhode Island, Newport, where I had an eye stop for a manager's course. So had a lot of miles ahead of me. So I ordered my last DoorDash in the house. I had McDonald's. And my McDonald's order is very simple. It's double cheeseburger with extra pickle, extra mustard, and that's it. Sometimes fries, not fries with DoorDash, because McDonald's fries, while delicious, if you don't eat them right away, they become absolute styrofoam. And so I opted out of the fries this time. I consume my food, and I play one last game of Madden. I think I won. I don't know. And then I was like, boom, get to bed early. Wake up like 3 a.m., deflate this air mattress, fucking throw everything else that's in the house in the trash, and fucking hit the road. But the Texas gods, as it were, had different plans for your boy. I woke up around 1 a.m. in my stomach. If you've ever been woke with stomach pains, it's a weird way to wake up. It's not like, you know, your arm falls off the bed and you kind of like, you know, shoot yourself into a way. You wake up in pain, and it's a weird, weird feeling. Don't recommend. 0 out of 10. And so my stomach's on fire. It felt like I had like swallowed acid. It was burning so bad. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like in a cold sweat. I was like, what the fuck? So, excuse me, not editing it. I went to the shower and I just stood there and I was just like, oh, I feel fucking terrible. What is this? And then out of nowhere, I started coughing and dry heaving, and then I threw up gray hamburger meat all over my feet in the shower, and I was like, fuck, I have food poisoning. And yeah, I feel like absolute dog shit. So I was kind of fucked. My brilliant plan of leaving on my own terms, doing, you know, a la Michael Scott, like catch you on the flippity flop and throwing the basketball as many times before I went in. Didn't come to fruition, so I was just another 24 hours laid up in the house. So I'm now behind schedule, and I feel sick as fuck. Like, I'm dying. Like, my dog, literally, she would lay with you and stuff, but she did not leave my side. She's like, my human is dying. I'm essentially just waiting to eat him when he passes. So, it was dire consequences. And so I literally just lay there and sweat, and I just tried to drink as much water and tried to flush it out of me as I could for the next 24 hours. And I'm like, all right, this is ridiculous. I'm behind schedule. I have to drive all the way across this country. I need to fucking knock out some miles. So I didn't get my big sigh in the driveway. Like, all right, goodbye, house. Thanks for all the memories, blah, blah, blah. So I just like in a hoodie and sweats, just fucking escaped Texas, which I feel like is a more poetic way to end my time in recruiting in Houston in general. It wasn't the best tour I've ever had. It was actually the worst. And I was like, yeah, one more big fuck you from Houston on my way out. So I got a whole 2 hours in, and I was like, I'm going to die. So I made it to Louisiana on the first leg of my trip and stayed in a shitty, like, murderer motel. And I was like, fuck, this is how it ends. But Once my travels felt a little better every day, knocking out miles, eventually made it to glorious Rhode Island, where my last big stop was. And if you've ever been to Rhode Island, it's actually a nice base. I was surprised because it's a huge training base for like senior enlisted and senior officers. Like the Naval Academy Preparatory School is there. A bunch of admirals and stuff are always there, like senior chiefs, master chiefs, the senior enlisted academy's there. So it's a big leadership kind of base. And so I was there for 2 weeks for a manager's course. It was all right. It was good. It feels good to be back in the military environment. Number one, I'm more famous, which is nice. I get recognized a lot more. A lot of pictures taken in hotel lobbies. It feels good to be out of recruiting just as a whole. So I'm glad that part of my life is behind me. But enough about me. We actually have a guest this month, I guess, whenever I decide to do this. So where are my notes? I lost notes. I'm so sorry. I had notes and they're gone. So I'm going to freestyle this intro, which everybody loves. So up in Newport, I got a homie. His name is Nikki. You may know him as Nikki MGTV from the YouTubes. He's a very popular military YouTuber who used to do kind of military information and news and instruction updates. But now he has coined the phrase the military TMZ. So any military drama or military adjacent kind of news, he will be the one, usually the first to report on it. He's pretty good at that. So luckily for me and you, he is stationed up in the Newport area. So I sat down with him. And luckily, he has a PhD in yapping, so he's a good interview. Thanks, Nikki, for your time. And everybody, enjoy the origin stories and experiences of Nikki MGTV. If you were going to diagnose me with something, what would you diagnose me with?
You need to suck it up. I think I'm so jaded now that I just think I'm like, suck it up to everybody. I'm like, it's not that bad.
So. And that's fair. All right, we're recording. So,
okay, good.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. I know you're a very busy man. So fitting me into your very tight schedule means a lot to me and our literally dozens of listeners. So This is a big deal. First things first. Why YouTube? Why is it? Because by the time I'm starting this interview, I would have done your introduction and stuff. So, why the fuck YouTube, man? It seems like such a competitive market.
It was a competitive market, and I'm gonna say that as far as like, I look back, you had Nava the Beast, that was the Marine YouTuber. You had Clayton Philpo, Marine YouTuber. You had Erica Burney, an Army person. You had JT Suits, a Navy person. I'm name dropping everybody, but it just felt like everybody was on YouTube, and I felt like I went to YouTube not thinking of competition. Like if you were looking at it from a strategic point of view, that would have been the worst idea at that time. But because I think I had actual genuine interest in wanting to do it just for the sake of making a video, it drove me to actually just go and do it. So it wasn't until I started that I was like, oh yeah, they're making this video or that video, and I just kind of do the compare and contrast. But yeah.
Okay. So have I ever told you the first video of yours I saw? Have we ever talked about that?
Never.
It was I forget what unit I was with. I was in an office somewhere. I was in the military, obviously, and somebody was talking about the combat action ribbon, and we went to your video of what's this ribbon, the combat action ribbon. Is that your most popular one, you think?
No. Okay, so the combat action ribbon, that's a funny story.
Oh, okay,
so,
hell yeah.
I'll shout out to Senior Chief Joshua Beard on this one.
Hell yeah.
Because he's actually retiring, I think, soon. But anyway, he was like, Nikki, you never told me you made these videos? And I was like, yeah, I thought you guys watched them. And he said some Master Chief showed him my video. And he was like, I should have known about this. And I was like, well, I don't come to work and, you know, display my entire social media to everybody. But
you should.
I should, yeah. But anyway, so one day he was like, you should make a video about the combat action ribbon. And I'm like, in my head, first off, do I have the credibility to do that or the knowledge to do that? And I was like, I don't have the credibility to do it because I don't have a car.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, I was like, okay. But I look back after OIF, OEF, all that stuff, like this was a relevant topic. And especially because the parameters of how to get it were changed in the instruction. And so I literally in that video was just talking about the culture, about the Combat Action Room, and talking about like the factual instruction of it. And if you, that's a pretty highly disliked video, even though it's I'm reading verbatim instruction, which I found quite hilarious from people that had gotten out, you know, during the war and stuff.
Well, I can imagine your comment section is full of back in my day stuff, so mm-hmm. we're not going to touch that. But it is interesting because when I first came upon you, that was the first video I watched, but then seeing you and then watched a few more of your videos, like, oh, this guy's an active duty corpsman making YouTube videos. And it was funny, just the comparative style to what you do now as like the kind of the reporter, the military TMZ thing, which you've coined. Back in our day, it was literally like, here's this doc talking about the car. I watched the video of like, this is how to do a neckerchief. It was like mm-hmm. just straight up military information. What do you think made you make that switch to like, okay, I'm going to be done covering these PSAs for boots. I'm going to report on news now. What do you think flipped that switch?
The flip was two things. Okay. Number one was I was burnt out. I didn't know what else to talk about. Like, and you get to a point where you're like talking about the most niche jobs that most people aren't going to do or something very obscure. And essentially, I started thinking about it and I started covering some news stuff. And this is kind of, I think, where there was a lot of turmoil in the military and kind of just things were heating up essentially. And that was 2020. And what got me to do it was also Casey Neistat. Do you know who that is?
I don't.
Okay. He's a vlogger, YouTuber that does vlogs in New York City. And essentially, he explained that he was essentially...
There's a dog in the background. If people
that's my
hear
dog.
There's a dog vomiting in the
He's
background.
He's got congestive heart failure. Please.
Poor buddy.
I want him to live through this podcast.
Okay, yeah, I'm leaving if the dog's croaking. That's crazy.
That will be, this will be yeah. a day to of the top of the charts.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, he was like, you need to capture people on YouTube through storytelling. And I started thinking about it. And I was like, I could tell a story of what's going on and educate from that about the military. And so usually I use stories of things that are relevant to kind of talk about and give factual information of why it's relevant or why it's wrong or why it's right.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Is there ever, because obviously you know what it, I say you know, of course you know, people who create content know what it takes to not only put it out there, then to edit it, and then, you know, put it out and advertise and all this stuff. After all the work that goes into making a video, especially in the military, because we have this weird kind of, how do I explain it? I talk about this with Zach a lot, is that our audience is kind of the worst audience to have when it comes mm-hmm. to making content. It just is. The military audience is not a good, like, you're not going to get, like, a super fan base from it. You'll get more hate than anything. And it's all people who served or usually didn't serve, but we have this weird kind of thing where it's like, we make all this content because we enjoy making it, and some people like it, but a lot of people don't like it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, like, have you ever made a video that you put all this work into and you're about to hit publish and you're like, fuck, maybe not this one?
I'm trying to think of a video. I've definitely questioned videos that I should publish. But I will say I've usually watched the video by myself, cringing at myself, to be as most people
yeah,
do.
Of course. Yeah.
And the one that I was kind of covering was about this Marine drill instructor, a female that went to West Coast MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, mm-hmm. As that push of Congress was requiring females to go over. And as this big push happened, obviously the public affairs were all over this to try and make this look good. However, like the token Marine drill instructor female was caught up in this scandal of cheating on her husband as she got over there.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh, is this what I'm covering? But I'm like, it's also relevant because it's talking about like, we're here to train recruits. We're here to make sure we instill discipline and we hold these levels of integrity, and especially the Marine Corps, like as yeah. me and you have been around Marines, yeah. like that's like what they hold by and why I think culturally they've had such a hard time adjusting to some of these things being implemented. So yes, I questioned it and that video went huge and yeah, I had so yeah. many dependents blowing up my Instagram. There were some that hated me for it weirdly. And they were spouses of drill instructors, which I found interesting. And then there were some people, that really enjoyed it. But the command general actually watched that video. One of my friends, that's an officer, that's a Marine. Yeah. I knew from high school. He hit me up. He's like, "Hey man, just a heads up, command general's about to watch your video." I was like, "Oh, okay, a little spicy, a little spicy." Yeah.
Well, you're definitely no stranger to having higher ups view your things and actually have a reactionary response to it. What kind of, so when you're making your videos, obviously you pick things from the news, the military culture and stuff. Do you ever, is there something that you're like, you see something and it's like super big and you're like, I won't touch that?
I've now made a rule, two things I will not touch.
Okay.
Domestic violence, number one, it's too messy. It's, and I look at it and I'm like, from even outside perspective looking in, that is just hard to do because it's there's more than one person, the percentage of who's to blame or whatever else. And you don't know if people are filming just after trying to create a inflamed response kind of thing. So I've kind of realized that that makes it pretty divisive. The other thing that I'm not covering is anything LGBTQ.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't touch that. It's just...
Well, you did... I mean, I believe you did a video over the Navy drag queen thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I did.
The thing that sunk, the thing I was a part of, or whatever. Yeah. I'm not salty about it. So was that kind of your final step in that kind of... That makes sense.
I'd done some other stuff before, but that one, honestly, I was just like, that is my new rule. And I didn't make the rule about the domestic violence stuff, but about that, I was just... I started realizing, like, it's frustrating because that community, whether me and you, like, I think me and you are impartial, like, do your job, your life, don't affect me, as long as you're an outstanding citizen.
100%.
And what you do on your own time, that's you. The frustrating part about it is that there are specific message key points that are wanting to be shared by that community or, you know, whatever subsect of those communities that are within that, that if they do or don't agree with you, or sorry, if they're not... If your talking points are not exactly like a puppet inside your body talking your mouth for you, it almost feels like it's not accepted. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's, and I don't really like that. I don't like the feeling that like I could say the wrong word and that gets tripped up. And so I think avoiding that is frustrating. I'm not going to say like I'll support anyone to have the right to do what they want to do, but it's just frustrating how like on a public sphere that I can't have a fair, balanced conversation, if that makes sense. And I think that's what I try and bring to my channel and what I talk about with anybody.
No, that's absolutely... I mean, like, as somebody who creates content, I understand completely. You don't want to disparage anybody. You want to report. But at the end of the day, I think just regular broadcasting reporting is dead. You know what I mean? As far as, like, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but, like, there's no such thing as reporting anymore. It's like, if you say something, then you're picking a side, and that's crazy. I think that's incredibly... weird about this country in the last 5 or 6 years or so when that all kind of started. But we'll get back to the YouTube stuff, but let's hear about you. So you joined the Navy what, right after high school?
Yep, 18, 2.1 GPA, total loser, like grew up in a trailer park, man. Like I look at it and my story is copy paste is what I would say.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Okay.
You know, I've read enough Reddit. I've read enough, you know, all these other things.
We've all read enough Reddit.
Yeah, we have for hours. But, you know, and that's why I think it gives me solace, like comfort in that, that I'm like, okay, so I, like, this was meant for me. Like, I'm that person that this is the ticket to that level up in life that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have had if I didn't do it.
Oh, yeah. No, so. I agree completely. Mm-hmm. So you join, was Navy your first choice?
Yes. So I was dating a girl. Her dad was a gunnery sergeant. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was staff sergeant, I think. Just became gunny, maybe. But anyway.
Who fucking cares?
Yeah. Who cares? He was an admin guy anyway. Doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But anyway, so he was like straight up telling me, he's like, do not join the Marine Corps. Do not join. And I was like, okay. He's like, any other branch. Okay, fair enough.
That's interesting. I hate to cut you off, but that's interesting because most Marines either, you know, higher up in rank or veterans or getting out or whatever, to hear them say don't join the Marine Corps is very interesting. So it sounds like he didn't have a great time, or was he one of those who was like, don't do it because you won't hack it? Was he one of those guys?
I think it was a combination of both. Okay. I think it was definitely like a quality of life. He was like this like Hispanic dude, like little yokey, Joe Rogan-y like kind of dude, if I could say anything. And I think he just knew, he's like, this is not your vibe.
Oh, interesting.
And that's fair. I'll be honest with you. I'm glad I didn't join the Marine Corps. Like, I'm glad I get a seat beside them, but I don't have to be in the same positioned in that same exact
seat. I always compare it to like being greenside. It's like living with the apes. Like mm-hmm. you're like Jane Goodall. Like you're not one of them, but you're observing. You're next to them. Yep. Like it's you have some safety there in that. You're
I like
not,
that analogy.
Yeah, you're not an ape, but you're living amongst them.
But anyway, yeah. To get back, he said, "Don't join." I was living in Fort Bragg area. Is it called Liberty now? I think
it's Liberty. Liberty. Yeah. It'd always be Bragg to me.
It'd always be Bragg. But anyway, I didn't even know the relevance of that base, to be honest. But I grew up near a Navy base, Pax River, Maryland, Patuxent River.
Oh, okay.
So very small, mostly contract people that are there. It's not like a real military base, I'll be honest. But anyway. My parents had moved down to Fort Bragg area, and, you know, I worked at this Barnes & Noble's. All these Ranger dudes are coming by, and I'm like, they got Ranger tattoos. Like, it's pretty intimidating. And I'm like,
yeah, for sure. When you're a kid,
Yeah, when you're an emo kid, you look at them, you're like, psh, that's not me.
We share that. We share that,
I know. Yeah. But anyway, so I knew my grandfather was in the Navy, and I essentially just knew I was like, Army's not for me. And this is during the 18-month deployments, like, as far as that goes. So anyway,
unprofessional. So unprofessional.
I know. Yeah. My bad. Okay. But anyway, so, and I'd been skateboarding with guys that had been in the Army and they were back from deployments. Like, yeah, man, I was there 18 months. And I was like, dude, not what I want to do.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah. Man. And this one guy's like, I'm reenlisting. And he's like, I'm going back again. And I was just like, all right, man. But anyway, and I just saw the show Carrier as well. Do you remember that show? Or did you watch
it? It was like a PBS show.
PBS documentary.
That's right,
yeah. I would say the public affairs nightmare of the Navy. They hate that show, but I watched it and I said, this was so real. I enjoyed it. And I could see myself being like,
I never watched it. Was it just like very, was it too real for PBS?
It was everything.
Oh, okay.
It was about, you know, sexual harassment, underage
drinking.
Oh,
really?
It had everything.
Holy shit.
You should watch that documentary now.
I'll probably go watch it tonight, yeah.
You probably should. And, okay. It's online. I'm sure you can find it free somewhere. But anyway, so I'd seen that, and then I'd actually had narrowed down Air Force or Navy.
Like we all do.
Yeah, it just made sense. And well, anyway, and it was funny, one guy that came in that was Army, he's like, are you sure you're going to do Navy, man? Like, you need to watch Carrier. He's the one that told me to watch this. And if anything, it did the exact opposite.
You're right.
But anyway, I'm sorry. But anyway, what ended up happening was I watched a show, cool, but, you know, I had went to the Air Force guy, and he was being inundated, really, like in this office. There were like four or five people. One guy was back from the basic training, and he was like, oh, dude, you got to do it, man. It's awesome. And I look back, I would never take the advice from someone that just graduated boot camp.
That's true, yeah.
But anyway, I told him I'd already talked to the Navy and had done the ASVAB, and he was like, well, here's a list of jobs. Like, come back when you're serious. And I just felt brushed off. And the Navy guy, this guy named Chris Lee, man, I was his first applicant, first person. Like, he doesn't even know how to like talk to me. He's just like, why are you joining? And then he like opens up a binder. He's like, is it maybe one of these reasons? Like, straight from recruiting school.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I was like, hey man, like, I don't need all that fluff. Like, I know, like, I understand you're trying to like educate me or whatever, but I'm like, it's this, I pay rent to my parents and live this crap life with a dead end job at Barnes and Nobles or this. And that was really it. So,
okay. So Navy, go to the recruiter who again was going by the handbook. I'll defend him, but, so you go off to MEPS, do all this stuff. Was Corman always on your mind, or you're like, I want to be so somebody who watched something like Carrier? I'd imagine you were like, oh, engineering or like some of those jobs.
Oh, dude, they as any Navy thing that's out there, it's always a flight deck. That's all they talk about.
I guess that's true.
And I was from a Navy base near an air base, right? So for me, I was like aviation. I want an aviation job.
Were you colorblind? Was that?
No, I think I just sucked at anything mechanical. I think that was just where I suck. So I was offered back in the day, storekeeper, SK. LS,
oh yeah,
you know,
the OG.
I was offered quartermaster. Mm-hmm. I was offered CS. Hell no, culinary specialist. And I was offered corpsman, hospital corpsman. And I was like, oh, these medical sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. And so I kind of took out of the races. I will tell you this: I was still dating that girl when I signed up. And I remember going back. I was like, I'm gonna tell this dude I joined. And he's gonna be like stoked and happy, or like, you know, like, hey man, you're dating my daughter. Like, cool.
Right.
I told him I got corpsman, and he was like, fucking idiot. Like, he was like, you're going straight with the Marines. I told you not to go with the Marines. He was not wrong.
Yeah,
you would eventually go. But You know, I appreciate it. I'm glad I went with the Marines much later in my career because I think the maturity was needed, but yeah.
So that is interesting you say that. I am of the mind, I agree, but I also disagree. So when it comes to your basic FMF sailor, I mean, mainly corpsmen, some RPs, some LSs, stuff like that, but like if you're talking like your basic line corpsman, I think that combat medicine is the best thing when you're coming up. Now, if you go to like an installation or a hospital or something, that's different. But like, I think your first tour should be where your body's okay, your mind is okay, and you are proving to yourself and to the people you're serving with that I am the best version of myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you say you were glad you came later. So what was your very first duty station coming out of corps school?
My first duty station. Okay. Let me also explain this.
Okay.
I have to, so everyone, like, I think part of our shtick is downplaying anything we've ever done. Like, I literally,
I don't have time for you to be pegging me directly. Like,
yeah,
this.
No, I'm just saying, like, I downplay it because it's just, it's an experience. And
yeah.
I was thinking about this today, actually, before we got on here, because I was thinking, like, the Navy, it's like, pick this job you have no context about whatsoever. And then it's choose your rate, choose your fee is the coin term. And you sit here and you're like, it's almost like the price is right. Like that, the game where you drop the coin. Is it
you mean Plinko?
Plinko.
It's
yes.
Plinko,
going
motherfucker.
Around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bouncing around. And you're just like, oh, I guess I'll pick that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like, by the time you're already done playing the game, it's like, well, you chose that one slot. You're like, I didn't know that. And then by the time you're done with it, you're like, how did I end up at that slot when I chose this slot? It makes no sense. So everybody in my family, nobody was military. Mm-hmm. My grandfather never talked about it, but, you know, he wasn't like some hardened, you know.
Some people just don't talk about
it.
Yeah,
just didn't talk about it. I'll be honest, he had way more accomplishments with business and stuff afterwards. So
that's probably why he doesn't talk about it.
But anyway, so I chose out of A school. They were like, where you guys want to go to? And they had offered, it was literally like a clinic in Quantico, a Guam hospital, Okinawa hospital, or I think that was really it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, these are lame. And then it was like Division Lejeune. And by the way,
right.
I was in North Carolina. I joined the military to leave. And so
yeah,
for
that
me,
makes sense. Yeah.
I'm from Maryland. I didn't want to go to Virginia. I didn't want to go to North Carolina. Mm. And Okie, you know, we're hearing all these bad things from your few interactions with instructors in Guam.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
It's the middle of the Pacific. Okay.
Here, Guam sucks top to bottom. So.
Yes. It's 8 miles wide, 40 miles long.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't really do much.
Yeah.
So anyway, I ended up just choosing a C school for further training because I went by the notion, like my family said, more training, the better off you are when you leave. And that's not entirely false.
Yeah.
But they'd offered us pharmacy tech, surgical tech, and ortho tech.
Or pharmacy tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I ended up choosing pharmacy because one of the instructors said that the orthopedic, where they like wrap casts and do stuff like that, could be done on the job training. You didn't need to go to school. So I was like, that can't be that valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that hard of a skill. You know, that's me knocking it, but is what it is. And then surgical tech, I just was like, I don't mind surgery, but I don't like wearing masks and all that. I wore glasses and they fogged up. And I was like, I don't know, man. I just, and in my eyes, I saw this as like, I could just have extra training. I thought like, this wasn't going to be my day job every day.
Right, right.
And then like, I go to the school and they're like training. And then they're like, I think I honestly didn't really grasp the fact I was going to the pharmacy. Even when I was graduating school, I was like, oh, I'm going to the pharmacy just at that hospital.
Yeah.
So my first command was Naval Medical Center in San Diego.
Okay.
For 4 years.
How was that?
Busiest or one of the busiest pharmacies ever. Like a pharmacy is made for old people. It's
right.
Just like you have to think about who are the highest users of a pharmacy. It's old people. So
yeah.
You had to learn to interact with them. You had to learn to do that. Customer service. Like, I think that job taught me how to talk to people, whether
yeah.
they're like a low rank person, a kid, an adult. Like, my customer service skills got pretty good with that.
Mm-hmm.
Being cursed out. But I'm going to be honest with you. Like, when, so they stood up a Wounded Warrior Battalion when I was there. And when I was there, I'm shocked. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. Joining in 2008, like, you weren't confronted with, like, really at realities of war.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'll never forget, like, seeing a kid, like, three of his limbs were amputated, like, rolling around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that. And I'm like, this kid's my age.
Yeah.
That was real. And that was a connection I hadn't really made, right? I will say that, like, another thing is these wounded warriors would come in, and, like, some of them were addicted to narcotics and things like that, and so some of them were abusing it, and some of them, like, it would bring anger issues, like, not every day at me, but I'm just saying, like, I noticed it, it was like, whoa, this is a problem.
Yeah.
So I respect the place pharmaceuticals have medicine. I learned a lot. I tell people the last place you go to is the pharmacy, so you're going to get cursed out, essentially. Like, people just want their meds. They want to go home.
Yeah, exactly,
they're pissed
yeah.
off. Learned a lot there. I worked inpatient pharmacy as well, where I was, like, making IVs and stuff and working critical care stuff. But it's a very clean version of the military. You're wearing scrubs. You're going to a air-conditioned building every day.
Right, yeah.
It is very much a 9-to-5-er job.
Well, I mean, I think for a lot of people, that's good, though, because you come from the civilian sector, go through boot camp and all this, you're like, oh, shit, I'm going to fucking win the war or whatever. But then you find out you get these 9-to-5 opportunities, and it helps you kind of, number one, calm down, get the Kool-Aid out of your system, and be like, oh, the military really is a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, there are dangerous jobs and non-dangerous jobs and all this, everything in between. But it really is a job.
Yep.
So I think a lot of people would benefit from a tour like that, too. So I understand why you said FMF later in the career was probably the better move. But
yeah.
So you go, you work at the pharmacy, dealing with old people and their Viagra. And then
lots of Viagra.
I can, honestly, I could, that makes so much sense because the amount of, I mean, you're in medicine, you know, but
yeah.
like the amount of dudes who have, even our age, you know what I mean,
yeah.
are having a problem with that stuff, just from, you know, stress and head trauma and all these other things,
mm-hmm.
it baffles me the amount of people that are like, oh yeah, I need Viagra. And they're
by
like
the
29.
Way,
it's like,
I want people
holy
to
shit.
Know, like, I am not, I don't throw shade on any of it. I don't really care. For me, it's just a
yeah,
job.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool, you need
oh,
it.
Of
all
course.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
for me, it's, you could laugh about it or whatever else, but for me, it's just medicine. Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah. Well,
I'm here to help. I'm just here to help people. And I don't want people to think that, like, I'm joking. Like, we gave a lot of it. We
no,
did,
no, of course. Yeah.
I respect
no,
it.
I think, yeah. No, if anybody took it in the way of, like, making fun, there's no fucking way. But
yeah.
My audience is smart, so you're fine. But, but no, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
The military, ED is a big problem. Not for me. And so you leave there. What's the next tour?
So I will say I did a small quotations deployment.
Oh,
TED, whatever
right.
you want to call it.
All right, Saul Dog. All right.
Yeah. yep. So I went on the USNS Mercy, which, by the way, I said I wanted to travel. So that's why I chose San Diego, little skater emo kid. I was like, dude, I got to get to San Diego, the mecca of skateboarding.
Right.
That's why I chose San Diego.
Yeah.
And they had told me the orders were attached to the Mercy. They really weren't, but that's later in the story. Anybody that was stationed there could be stationed on the Mercy or go.
Oh, okay.
And I do want to give this story because it's interesting because I almost got Captain's Masted or like NJP. So
and how many years? You're like 3 years in at
yeah,
this point?
I'm an
yeah.
E4. Dude, it's not good. I made this joking video about like stat or urgent SEPA calls. SEPA calls are these little lozenges that numb your throat.
Okay.
Because we
right,
would
right.
have nurses write on this board to say stat SEPA call. And like, we were like, that's not a stat medication. We have real people that are dying. Like,
right, right.
use that term accordingly. It's not stat. We understand.
Okay.
So I made a video about this. My chief was like, I love that video. And then like a day later, like that weekend, my department head calls me, Commander Von Berg, and he's like, hey, HM3, just call and see if you can take down that video and call your chief after this. And I'm
interesting.
Like, I like went back to work. I'm like kind of freaking out. I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble. And I like write an apology email. And like this Lieutenant Lay pharmacist was like, I had to watch every video and make sure there was nothing else as an investigating officer. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like
yeah.
whatever. But I think my apology email worked because that was like without anyone telling me. I just did it.
Yeah,
I just
yeah,
wrote
yeah.
him a letter.
That's fair.
Or an email. And that I think kind of helped glaze things over where I was like, hey, did not mean to embarrass you. But this is when YouTube did not have that many videos. So like if
yeah.
you YouTube Naval Medical Center San Diego is like the admiral that ran the hospital
yeah.
and then my video. It was great.
What was the, do you remember the joke? What was the joke?
It was just joking. Like I had essentially made this whole skit up of like, oh my gosh, we're running around the whole pharmacy to grab Cepacol.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
it was
see,
like,
yeah.
okay, not that urgent.
Yeah, yeah.
But the pharmacist was in it. Another technician was in it and some other stuff. So
oh, okay.
we all kind of got the slap on the wrist, but got the
I
yelling because I was the active duty guy.
Oh, okay.
So Senior Chief Sanders took me to his office and kind of gave me that old school like, what the hell's going on with this? You're making dumb videos. He's like, I got you making videos about medications in the pharmacy. I got another guy doing porn on the side. I'm like, whoa.
Well, yeah, I don't think we're in the same league.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, my issue is joking and yeah, not that big. But yeah, so it was weird because right after that, you know, to go back to the TAD deployment, mm-hmm, detachment, whatever you call it, my chief was like, hey, you're going on the Mercy. And I was like, my dreams come true. I'm like, I should get in trouble more often.
Right.
But anyway, I went on that, and that was like a great 6 month. It kind of rejuvenated my like, whoa, the military can kind of do fun things. And it's not just medications and passing that stuff out. And, you know, we have impacts other places. Again, I'm a white dude trailer trash that I jokingly say I'm like Joe Dirt. But anyway,
wish.
Yeah, I know. But I say like, you know, I would have never had the opportunity to move to San Diego, never had the opportunity to go to Hawaii, Guam. We went to Indonesia, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Philippines in 2012. And so, I came back and that just rejuvenated. Like, I was like, okay, I can do, if that's military, and that's not even like, I wouldn't say like operational military, but if that's an opportunity I can get, I'd like to continue.
Well, especially for somebody in the medical field, I've heard hospital ships are kind of shitty. I don't know, but I've talked to other corpsmen that were on them. Most of them were on them against their will, so obviously experiences vary. But what is it like actually being underway with a hospital ship, like with a mission set? Like, we're going to make port here, here, and here, and I assume you were doing like some sort of medicine while you were there?
So every place we went to, we'd get off the ship, which is not normal with ships. Normally it's like the ship is doing operational stuff when it's at sea, and then it parks or, you know, ports, and then essentially you get let off for a free time. So the difference between this mission set is you're doing things at the port. So yes, you're not underway as long,
right,
but your mission is at land to do things and do, like, they call them MCAPs, or I think they're medical civic action programs, DENCAPs, dental and surgical. So we'd bring cases on board. We would like set up little makeshift clinics and little schools and courtyards and stuff like that to try and help out these populations. And a lot of doctors liked it because you saw a lot of conditions. You're like, whoa, how did this end up going for 10 years? Like, I mean, you would talk to people that had like discharged from generals for 10 years. Like, what? You never got seen for that? Like, just things we take for granted in our current health system. I'm not saying the U.S. health system is amazing, but just some of those basic care needs that aren't being met other places.
Does any story stand out like in your mind of like, cause you know, like you said, you're this kid from the East Coast who is now traveling the world and helping people. Like, you're actually making a difference and doing all you can do. Is there a story, like, I remember the first time I left on a deployment and I went to another country and I was just looking around all the cultural differences and stuff. Do you still remember that feeling of like, wow, this is so different? Like, does any story stand out?
I will. Yes.
Okay.
So I went Advon team from Guam. By the way, I shit faced in Guam. Like, it was totally one of those days where you got to be back at 12 and I like just pounded all day. Fell asleep on the beach, got a sunburn, went back to the ship. And
well, you're a sailor. That's what we do.
So anyway, but I had to leave at 4 a.m. So, dude, I was packing at 12 a.m. to 1 a.m.
Hell yeah.
I slept for two
yeah.
hours. And so we were going from Guam. We had to fly to Narita in Tokyo. And then we flew down to Jakarta, Indonesia, and then to Manado, I think it was. When we got off in Jakarta, mind you, this was Indonesia, like, proper. It's the capital. And I get out, and it's me. There's a LS, logistics specialist, senior chief, which he's in his mid-40s. We had a pharmacist that was in her, like, late 30s, early 40s. And then there was a logistics specialist, like, supply person. It was E2, and then me. We literally look like, what's that movie? Meet the, I forget.
We're the Millers?
We're the Millers.
Yeah, yeah,
and we look like we're the Millers, seriously. And we're in Indonesia, in Jakarta, and a lot of people don't know this. I didn't. I was naive. Mm-hmm. It is a primarily, like, Middle Eastern-influenced Muslim-type environment where, like, they have all the garb and stuff like that. And I'm like, where am I at?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's
I thought
jarring,
I was in Asia, yeah.
Yeah.
And people are looking at us like we're some, like, Midwest white family that's out there.
Some vacation, like,
it's not
yeah.
us. Yeah. But that was my first kind of culture shock where I had just never been, like, all eyes on us.
Yeah.
That experience really taught me, like, how much we get viewed as Americans is like, we are rich, we have a lot of money. And I was just like, dude, I'm an E4 in the military. Yeah,
if you only knew.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm living paycheck to paycheck out here a little bit, you know, making a couple $100 into the savings if I can. But
what is funny, because like, you know, you do assignments all over the world and stuff, and you know, your S2 or your Intel or whoever tells you like, all right, well, don't look try not to look American. It is impossible to not look American if you're fucking American. It just is. Like we used to, back when I was doing my secret squirrel shit, that was a big thing. But then you would roll up to these countries where it's like this shitty little civilian airport with a bunch of tattooed white guys. And then they'd be like, we're just here. Like, it's stupid. You know what I mean? If you're American, you look fucking American.
Well, I'll never forget. It was funny because I actually so I grew up skateboarding, like I told you. Mm-hmm. So I went to this mall that was in Manado, Indonesia, and they had like this like kind of like a Pac Sunny type thing.
Okay.
And there's not many skateboarders in Indonesia, by the way. Like, shame. There's probably not, like, it's not a first world country where there's developed streets. Like, it's very, very niche type thing. Like, there is influence from Western world, but I like showed up and like one kid was skateboarding. I was like, oh, can I see your skateboard? I was like, oh yeah, okay. Like, language barrier, not that.
Yeah.
I did one kickflip, blew their mind. I like, and I was like, they're like, they like motioned to get my phone number. They're like, oh, we need to skateboard
they
now.
They made
you need
king.
To come out.
Yeah. Like, you're now king, like, of that country.
Yeah. They were like, dude, you can kickflip. You're going to be the mayor.
Hell yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
So
kickflipping mayor is what they need.
I feel. I was kissing babies right after that.
Goddamn right.
That was good times, man.
Hell yeah. Oh, okay, so do that. So at this point, you said you've been in a few years. You're E4, E5 around there. So what's your next tour after that?
Rota, Spain, which I'd actually had said I was going to get out of the military a little bit there because like everyone wishy-washy. But then I talked to my chief that was on that ship and he knew somebody that could get orders. I essentially at that point was like, if I don't get something I want, I think I'm just going to get out. Mm. It's going to be operational is what I wanted. There was nothing or overseas that I would be able to tolerate.
Yeah.
I can tolerate Rota, Spain. So
I've been to Rota, obviously, just some port and stuff, and it's fun.
It's a good little drinking town.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where my alcohol addiction started. I'm kidding. But it was a good time. Definitely travel the world there too, man. Like I went to like 21 countries while I was there, and it was cool.
That's awesome. Fuck yeah. So in this whole time during your career, you said you made that video you got in trouble for back in your early days. So you had started YouTubing at this point.
The last couple months of Rota, that's when I started.
Okay. Yeah. So at the time you were just kind of, cause we're kind of the same. You talked about like you're an emo kid and stuff, but you were always very like creative.
Yep.
And I was kind of the same way. Like I was big on MySpace and I had bands and all that shit. So I was always like doing something. And, so you took that passion of always doing something and you turned it into kind of a YouTube career. So when did it, so you're leaving Rota mm-hmm. and you started this YouTube journey. When did it click with you of like, okay, not only am I going to do this, I'm going to do this all the time.
Okay. This is what I was going to tell you off the pod. And I said
you
I have
said
to
nothing,
say
that you said nothing was off limits.
No. I'm saying it's on the, I didn't want to say it before until now.
Okay.
I think this story is so pivotal.
Okay.
Of Nicky did everything right. Not knowing he did any of it right. Okay. Let me explain that.
I like that. That's a t-shirt. Yeah.
Yes. And so anyway, what ended up happening for me was, I'd made it like 15 videos and I'd followed JT Suits. Did you ever follow him or see him?
The name sounds, who knows? Okay. You know what I mean?
So he was one of the, he was the Navy YouTuber and they did kind of like, he would sit down at the Veteran Affairs Center of his college and have like little podcasts, like 15 minute episodes of like, what have you thought about sea stories or whatever else? And essentially I was like, hey man, I'd love to come on. I've been in 7 years and change. Like I'm going to be back in San Diego. And I was making videos and essentially I listened to Casey Neistat again and he said, just record, upload. Every video will get better. And I did it for my MacBook Air, use that camera and it was trash, but then I just kept going and I used my big camera and so on and so forth. Well, anyway, I had these like 15 videos that were up. I will give my ex the one bit of credit she did do, which was this girl would watch my videos or like them because I was, oh, someone liked my video, you know, like it's getting no views. But anyway, I told JT like, hey, like when I get back to the States, I'm going to come up. Dude, I landed in San Diego, rode him, I think on Instagram or something, and I got a rental car because I didn't have my rental car from Spain yet, or my actual car. And so anyway, I rented a car. I drove 3 hours to Thousand Oaks. And at that point, it was like maybe 3.5 hours with traffic. And my ex at the time was like, this is crazy. Like, you're going this far to make a video. Went up there. At this point, he had 26,000 subscribers. And I was like, okay. And he ends up trying to figure out what the video is going to be. And I said, hey, I was watching like good videos and it was like the top five of this or the worst top five of this whatever. And listicles is what they call them. And I was like, oh, let's do that with Navy Jobs. Like, I've never seen that. Good idea.
Yeah.
And so we did one top five on his, or top five worst on his job, top five best on mine. And I remember him, he was like outside smoking a cigarette and he's like, dude, we're going to get you 1,000 subs. And I was like,
damn.
All right, man. I just like did. That was just, I think I had like 80 or 60 or something at that point. And he knew I was trying, which is cool because he was like, yeah, come on, I'll shout you out. And like, so when they talk about like how to start, I would tell anybody like, go to smaller creators, link up with them. Like, not to just exploit them. Like, I really wanted to be on a video and talk about it. I enjoyed watching the content. I thought I could add value. And that video is one of his biggest videos right now. And it's one of my biggest videos. So, it was great. And the sad part is some people took those top five, top worst as like their gospel. So when they got to you as a recruiter, they were like, I'm picking LS because they said supply is good. And I said, supply is good because you can hook people up.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So that's funny. Do you remember what the lists were?
I think his top five were like LS, Corman. I think RP was up there, maybe.
In the worst?
It no, had to best. Be the worst.
Oh, really?
No, I think it was the best because it was like chill.
That was very super chill, yeah.
So there were a couple. I think worst, like we went through a lot of aviation and nuke stuff. And that was pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Have to check it out.
Yeah.
Shout
it's
out
pretty
RP.
Pretty dated, man. It's pretty dated. It's like 7 years ago now, but.
It's forever ago.
But for a while, like that was my one claim to fame video. Like everyone's like, I saw the top five jobs video. I was like, oh gosh. Okay. Appreciate it.
Hell yeah. No, that's awesome. So down in Rota, where to next?
Oh, and by the way, I was in San Diego for independent duty corpsman school. So that was like,
oh, sure. Yeah.
You saying like, oh, how did you know you were going to do this? Like if anybody in my school, it's got like a 50-ish% pass fail rate. Mm-hmm. So essentially like half the people are failing. And so we start with 26. I think we ended up with like 11 on ours. So it was pretty intense. Some people rolled for chief season and stuff like that.
Right.
So they couldn't continue, but it was about half. Right.
Okay.
So for how intense the school was, everyone's like, dude, why are you doing this on the side? Like, we have no free time. We are studying every day, all day.
I'm not going to lie. When I found out you were going through IDC school, I was just like, why? Because I know I've talked to a lot of IDCs how challenging that school is. Like, why?
And so I was doing that, but my editing was so simple. It was just like, no overlay pictures, videos. Like, I look back, I would have way more subscribers probably kicking off. I had done more with that. But yeah, so I just kept doing that and then it grew. By the time I was done there, I think it was like around like 20,000 or so, 23,000. But after that, I went to Field Medical Training Battalion West. That was nothing like
East Coast
having
is better.
Yeah, I know. Right. That's the only place you have.
That's
true. Okay.
That's true. There's like 10 of us.
But dude, there is nothing like going. And I still think social media is very new and they just didn't. They did not appreciate what I was doing. They made fun of me about it, whatever else. And I just laughed because I'm like, you're sitting here from the perspective of like, you think you're the shit because you're an instructor at Field Med.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's all I got.
And I'm like, we're both first classes earning the same check and I just got a fat bonus and I make more than you. So in my eyes, I'll laugh.
Yeah, you exactly. Know what I mean? That's
I
all
didn't
you
really
do.
Care.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. Like I posted a photo of me like, the first ruck or something, like I was like, oh, I packed everything up. It's kind of cringy, whatever. I get it. I don't think it's that cringy, but like one of this guy, H1 Rod, was like, yeah, like look at what your first class did. It was like showing everybody like my Instagram, and people were like, okay, like,
right, yeah,
okay,
yeah, trying to get a big chuckle out of them, yeah.
And it didn't really matter. I'm like, dude, I'm gonna talk shit because I really don't care. I'm just gonna be real. Like, your only claim to fame is you tell kids they suck. And you were a sniper platoon. Like, I'm like, I just don't want this to be the entire personality. Like, we're two human beings.
Yeah,
like, let's
for
talk
sure.
And, like, have a conversation. I'm talking down on it because in my mind, I'm just kind of like, I don't vibe well with people where their entire identity is this.
Right, yeah,
and I think me and you kind of share that. 100%. And maybe me and him now could talk, but I'm just saying, like, at that point, like, the BS power dynamic of instructors and that, I didn't really appreciate, to be honest. And, you know, I look at it where I'm like, there were a lot of times where I said, you guys could be true leaders and mentors to these kids, but you abuse that and you're being assholes.
Yeah, no, and, 100%.
I'll give a shout out to this girl, Jess Anderson. She's a first class. She came from being a recruit division commander at boot camp.
Okay.
And she was like, I believe RDCs that are out there that respect the limitations of their training and the purpose of training and educating the next generation is very well respected and honored at boot camp. They do have their fun, but I definitely would say there are limitations. Where this, I would say, was wild, wild west. Just like, it's just what it was. Like, even the instructors were like pissed off because the command general, their office was right across the street. And we had heard, like, I guess he calls over sometimes when they're like, why are you hazing those kids out there?
Oh,
like,
okay,
and it kind of stops the fun for them. So when we go to the field for the exercise, they're like, there's no admiral or generals out here to help you guys out. And so
darn.
I just, it's just what it is. I mean, I believe in tough love, but sometimes I think it was not the program overall. There are just certain individuals, I would say, that I think could have been checked a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's any, especially when you talk about like combat training or any kind of expeditionary stuff, which you stay long enough in the Navy in a combative job, you're going to get one of those assignments. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to go through those trainings. And I agree. Coming up, especially the RP ranks, like when you're young and you're brand new, the whole thing is like, you're going to be a bodyguard. Like this whole expeditionary FMF, like you're just, you're going to God's gunslinger, all that nonsense. And then you look around, especially the RPs that are training you, because there's not a lot of us. And I'm like, what makes you qualified to train me? And why are you being such a dick? Like, it doesn't make it, it makes no, I'm learning nothing. I'm gaining no comprehension of this potential job I'm going to be doing. All I'm hearing is you saying, do this, do that. Okay, cool. I did it. And then they sit back and they're like, anyway, so I was in Iraq. It's like, is this a class for me or you?
Yeah.
I
mean? Like, is this your ego?
Yeah, exactly.
What like, is it? You bring up a very good point because people for like hear about my story of how I went there. It's like, you went to field med as a E6, which is normally an entry level course.
Yep.
And you went as an independent duty corpsman where you were trained at a higher level medically. So really it was the only thing I really got out of it was the Marine Corps stuff, which I did appreciate some of the studying, but I will be fair and say like it is meant to be passed by an 18-year-old, right?
100%.
So the issue with that is like it's at a slow pace of how much time you get to study where I came from IDC school where it was like, you have a day to remember this. Go. And I was like, I could have finished field med probably in 2-3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I did not need it to be 8 weeks long. But, you know, I guess running around saying rah, rah, rah is getting me motivated and prepared.
You got to brainwash those kids. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So you do that. So now this is your first FMF tour. So obviously you're a first class now. You're an IDC. Where do you go after that?
I go to Marine Aircraft Group 12, which people are like, you're the wing. And I'm like,
I'm going the wing. I'm going to fuck. Yeah.
I know. One of those things that I want to say is like, you know, I think there's some things about the wing that just get broad stroke generalized that you'll see and you'll understand. There's more nuance to it than just jets, go in the air, drop bombs.
Right. Well, like, of course. Yeah.
But I think the infantry side of the Marine Corps really dumbs it down on what they do.
Well, in the Marine Corps' defense, and I'm not being disingenuous or bashing or anything, but it is infantry-centric. So it's like they are the tip of the spear. Everybody, special operations, aviation, logistics, it all supports the infantry.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I don't know, a lot of infantry men and women now, they know because, A, we are the main focal point of the Marine Corps, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. They forget that there's other things, and so I think that's where a lot of that fucking I'm a grunt and you're not nonsense comes from. And again, I love my grunts, and they do incredible things, but I think that's where that disconnect is because that's all they know. Yeah. Therefore, anything else is lesser. You know what I mean? So,
But the Marine Corps forget. There's a lot of people in the Marine Corps that forget, like, you need that nerdy kid that can work that computer system.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For that F-35.
Right, yeah.
And that's harder than ever to fill right now. Mm. And so, sure, they may not be doing 23 pull-ups. But if they're doing 15 and they get the F-35 in there, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I commend people that are willing to take that challenge. It is a tough life, to be honest. One of the guys that I was with in Japan, he was like, and by the way, that's where I was at, Iwakuni, Japan, location wise. The Marine Corps had no money. No surprise there for anybody.
That's true.
And there, he was like a sergeant, F-35 trained. I forget what his actual MOS was. I'm not going to tell you the number because no one remembers them anyway. unless they're 0311 or something. But anyway, so essentially they were like, get this guy to reenlist any way possible. Whatever you can give him that is not monetary or like you can do with your budgets. And so he's like, he just threw out, he's like, jump school. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They were like, okay, we'll do that. Like, oh, we'll T80 cost that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was like, oh, shit. Like, they're really going to do this.
Those wings will get people to stay in. Yeah, that's true.
And so he was like, okay. And then he never actually stayed in. He actually got out, and I forget which contract company he works for, but he's like, all right, I get to stay in Japan. I'm still going to make more money than I would if I stayed in because he was trained. So, but yeah, being with the wing, it opened my eyes up to a lot of the Marine Corps stuff. And so, a lot of the hotel ops you hear about from the Marine Corps side of things.
Right.
I did not get the hotel ops. If you are if you are near the jets, if your job revolves around the jets, you will probably end up in some position like that. But if it's like setting up some kind of airfield or if it's some kind of thing like that, like a tower for air traffic control, things that are like more distance out, not specifically involving the aircraft, mm-hmm. you're probably going to have time where you do quotations field time. Because there needs to be security, there needs to be intel, there needs to be computers, and all these other things that happen. So,
okay,
but yeah,
so I got to prepare to potentially be in the field again.
thank God. I think you can say no.
I'm not. I'm gonna say no when I get there. So it's fine.
Think you will have to ask and beg to have one time to go out to the field if you really want to. But
I don't see that.
Just have them bring back MREs. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay. All right, there you go. Yeah. That is enough. I agree. So back to the YouTube stuff. So we've seen your career, obviously. I kind of wanted to talk about your career a little bit, obviously, because it shows that, yeah, you're a YouTuber and people know you from that, but also it's not like you're doing a job or a career in the military where, like, you know, again, no shade, but like you're a shopkeeper or something. Yep. One of the raids you mentioned earlier, like you're a fucking IDC, like you're mm-hmm. an independent duty corpsman, still active duty, still working in medicine and seeing patients every single day.
Yep.
But you still make content for YouTube. And I think that needs to be addressed because a lot of people, and again, now I'm going to throw a little shade. A lot of these military influencer types have those admin boring jobs. You know what I mean? And they don't have any, they work 9 to 5 sometimes. Other than that, they're not doing anything. So they have time to be shirtless in the gym doing all this nonsense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it really is a testament to somebody who enjoys making content, but also has a very tough schedule sometimes.
Yeah.
So, I definitely feel you there
for
sometimes.
Sure.
What is one video? Now we're just going to do questions at this point.
That's okay.
What is one video that you uploaded and you're like, this won't do well and went bananas, and you're like, why is this one doing so well?
Combat Action Room.
Really?
Yeah, that was
interesting.
I just was like, why is this one blowing up?
It's
funny you mention that, but yes, I remember always looking back, I was like, what? Because you, as a YouTuber, I hate saying that, but you do study like what worked, what didn't
work. Of course.
Why was that beneficial, and how can I replicate that, not just for views, but like, if you're watching it and they're watching a lot of it, YouTube recommends these types of videos again. So you're like, I want to talk about what people like. If it aligns with what I like, I'll cover it. It is interesting that video did blow up and is still pretty high up there. I have a couple 1 million videos. One of those is the Air Force window break incident that happened on base. Like, there was some, like, divorce issue going on, and she was trying to get on base without an ID. It was a messy situation. That one, there was a bartender that stole the airman's ID and
I remember
broke
that
it.
I remember that video
that blew up. And then there was the one of Grand Thumb versus Dakota Myers that
I remember that
blew up. Dakota probably loves my content. I'm kidding. No, I have a couple of videos that talk about some of the negativity towards him, and I don't mean that. You know, like,
I've never met him, so
I haven't either. But I think every video I try and be genuine when I say, like, I truly respect what he's done. Whether I don't whether the Marines that were with him have whatever, like,
oh,
he did
sure,
something.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
he did
yeah.
something. The end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I respect anybody that's, whether they're the person left or right, I show them the same respect.
Yeah.
It's a hard position to be in, to live up to that. Like, and you say that too, of like having a day job and living up to like what people expect from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Online versus real life. I feel like I've earned my, in real life when people are like, oh, screw this guy, like I'm gonna hate on him, and then right. like they meet me and I'm like, I'll work my ass off and you're gonna see it and just leave it at that. And
yeah,
you know, I think if there really was a bad part about me in real life, like we've seen with other military influencers, yeah, where so. Like I don't do my job and I'm just in yeah. there vlogging or something, you'd probably hear about it. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And so I really keep those two separate as much as possible. I feel like usually when I'm getting in trouble, it's because someone else is trying to bring it there, and I'm like, why are we using rank? You could have just wrote me in.
Right, like, right, right, right.
Use your words, Timmy. Use your words. You know. And so there's that I just I respect people. I just think people don't maybe think that I or have preconceived notions of what my thoughts are.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Yeah. What was the biggest surprise of somebody agreeing to be, because I know you've talked with Command Master Chiefs and all kinds of officers and stuff. Who were you super surprised or like, yeah, I'll have a conversation with you?
I think I've had a lot of conversations with Force Master Chiefs just in general, like, because just so many of them have reached out that yeah. I can tell you this. I still can't comprehend the numbers, right? Of who
right,
watches
right, right.
what.
Yeah.
And if we sat down and said, hey, name 300 people, that'd be kind of hard to do, you mm. know, just trying to grasp 1,000, 10,000, a million people watching it. I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
you is really what it is.
Sure.
And I'm glad people are enjoying it. And what I've found is usually these people agree with what I'm saying. It's just frustrating because they can't have those candid conversations on the public sphere
and
public affairs bounces into it, legal bounces into it, and then no one really agrees. And so we never really have this true conversation where a lot of people will be like, thank you for covering this in a more real light
mm-hmm.
than just what they want to cover on whatever release document that's out there.
Yeah. No, that makes ton
yeah,
of sense.
So it doesn't really answer the question of like one specific person.
Right, right.
I will say there was a public affairs officer, Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown.
Yeah, that was hilarious. He was an admiral. And he was trying to get me on the team over at the Pentagon to help out with it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I've told every person, I'm like, I'm team military. Like,
right, yeah, yeah.
I will help you. Like, I'm not like, yes, I will cover negative things, but I can help you navigate landmines. And mm-hmm. a lot of times you guys aren't good at navigating around them. So that's where I kind of sit here. And I'm like, I would love to help out with that. But yeah. Unfortunately, my day job as the independent duty corpsman has weighed more than me doing that. I do think I could provide value in the social media aspect that maybe could weigh more. But the Navy sees me as more valuable as IDC. Sure, I'll keep doing that and I'll roll with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So. Would you rather respond to every comment on every video or be the only medical provider for sick hall for a month?
I will say this. the comments are, I like, because I can be creative. I would like to
sure,
respond every
yeah,
I
yeah.
used to respond to every comment when I was real tiny as a channel.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
I would. But the other option you gave me, I do every day and I don't like it. So I'm like, yeah, I'll respond to comments. I don't know if you've seen my story. I will take a comment and make something funny out of it.
Yeah,
so
for sure. Yeah.
It's sometimes it's low hanging fruit. What I love about comments though is like, you can tell it's like some dude that served in like 83.
Yeah. The verbiage is weird for the old school guys.
Yeah.
He's
like, I've served 4 years. I was in Lejeune, you know? And you're like, all right, man. And he's like,
cool.
He's like, you're not even military. And I'll be like, hey man, like going on 16 years, like not trying to flex, like how many years, but I'm like, I obviously have some credibility to discuss these topics. And they're like, doesn't matter, still boot. And I'm like, oh my God, man. It just never ends.
The best advice I got was from an HMC when I first came in. And he was just like, everybody's a boot to somebody. Like, he wanted to clear that shit up early when he got the new jobs, like his new corpsman and the RP and stuff. He was just like, everybody's a boot to somebody. You're all boots. Shut the fuck up. Like, he's like, he hated that shit. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm a boot to somebody. He talked about he was in Iraq, and he was in the invasion, and he was just like, the day I realized the military has like this weird posturing problem, he's like, I was fighting in Iraq, and I come back, and I meet somebody who was also in Iraq, and he goes, oh, what you were with, and blah, blah, and they were talking, and this guy, instead of them forging a friendship of some kind, just goes, well, what part of Iraq? You know what I mean? It's just like, nothing's enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that's when this chief, very level-headed man, was just like, everybody's a boot to somebody. Nobody's cool. You know what I mean? Everybody stop that shit. I'm not dealing with it.
Well, I agree with that. And now I'm sitting here and I'm like, so what frustrates me is, and this is why, you know, I'll shout out like Josh Beard and other people that have talked about their war experiences, or even you or whatever else, is I appreciate it, because I'm like, I need you. I need to extract that data from you for me. Because the reality is, I could be in that next situation. I'm like, I don't need that barrier. I really don't. I need that information. And so I come at people that have that experience, and I'm not here to stroke you. I'm just like, let me hear it, because I...
Oh, absolutely. It's how we learn. Yeah.
And so it gives me a real picture, or an attempt at a real picture of what I could encounter, where I'm like, you know, I discussed with you previously where Luis Fonseca, the Navy Cross recipient, had discussed on his interview that, like, they were rationing MREs, like two people, one MRE for the day or something, and one bottle of water in Iraq or something to that, you know, I don't know the recount of exactly, but
right.
I was like, oh, I'm under this notion in training environment that I'm always going to have the IV bags that I need. I'm always going to have these medications I need. I'm always going to have this or that. And so really it's the chaos of war, I think I respect more now, because I do watch old documentaries too of like Vietnam guys where they're like, oh yeah, I was left and I was picked up by this unit. And I'm like, and I'm like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
And then it ingrained in me. I was like, that's why the Marine Corps is so big on the accountability, the count off and one, two, three, like in every rifle and every person and every, and I'm like, I don't want to be left behind. And there's truly people that do get left behind. Mm-hmm. And so you need to regroup and see who you got and make sure you figure out a way to get them back or where they're at. Because if not, you know, you got to report up and see what's going on.
No, there's always a method to the madness. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't see it for years and years and years, as rickety as the Marine Corps and the Navy can be, you, all these bullshit rules. But then you look back, now that we're more senior, I'm like, oh yeah, that's why. You know what I mean? You don't see it right away, and you never will. But the older you get and the more seasoned, the more rank and stuff, you're like, it may not have been delivered the best way, but I understand the intention.
I will say, if I could weigh Navy BS or Marine Corps BS, I would take Marine Corps BS.
Agreed.
And I say that because Marine Corps BS is so predictable. Mm. You literally are going to know what's going to happen. Like, if you just start paying attention, you're like, they're going to make us do this. Mm. They're going to make us do that. So one of the examples was, like, we just finished like a field op for some training requirements we needed. And a bunch of Marines that were like sergeants and below were like, I think we're going to get some liberty and be able to do stuff. I was like, nope, not happening. They're like, right. What do you mean, Doc? I was like, we're going to clean rifles. We're going to clean green gear. We're going to have to do gear accountability. And sure enough, I went to that CO's CUB brief, the command update brief, and commander's update brief. And I straight up, he said verbatim what I said. And I said, I've been doing this too long.
Yeah,
and I, 100%. You know, it's, and the beauty of that is, you know, as you do it, you can say, hey guys, like, let's get this done now, because he's already going to say it. So let's get it done. And that way it's like, we do have time to chill and to do other stuff.
Yeah.
So I like that ability to anticipate, where I feel like in the Navy, I don't have that same consistency.
I'm trying to avoid a wormhole that you've opened in a good way when it comes to Navy BS, because I'm of the mindset that, like, I hate the old school mentality of back in my day, or it's different now, but we're talking strictly Navy right now. Marine Corps is going to be the same no matter what.
Yeah.
The Navy has changed so much. Like, you've been in, what, 16 years now? Mm-hmm. I've been in 14, like, it's around the same time. Like, the Navy has changed so much and become such a, I don't even describe this, become such a weird, we don't know what we're doing culture. And it's the blind leading the blind. And I think that's fascinating, because I just came from this manager's course here. I mean, you work in the place where there's senior leaders and officer leaders or enlisted and officer leaders and stuff. So there's all kinds of huge leadership, but no one seems to know what they're doing. You know what I mean? We're like waiting for the next big thing, but also we're training for stuff that might, I don't know. The Navy's in a really weird kind of void right now. I think like years and years ago, it wouldn't be this big push for, I mean, we're both senior first classes, like push for chief. It would be like, hey, if you want to go get it, blah, blah. Now everybody I meet, when you put it on chief, you know what I mean? It's this weird, yeah, we're not going to do that. But like, you know what I mean? It's like everybody just, I don't know. We're not really, am I making any sense at all? You know what I mean?
No, you are. And it's like, we're standing by, we're like, we're kind of like the SpongeBob meme where he looks like a like the monkey, and he's like,
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, where do you want me to go?
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. Like, which way do you want me to go? And so we're hearing like, oh, these different adversaries or whatever else, and it's great. The thing that's hard is like, well, how can I lean into that?
Right.
So really, I mean, I will tell you this is I, not to be cocky, I feel like I, coming towards the end of my career, and I have some things I need to brush up on, skill sets and things like that. But excuse me. The one thing I'll say is like, it's just I cringe saying this, but it's just train the next guy. You know, like
yeah.
Because it's not until you start picking their brain where you're like, what would you do in this situation? And then you're like, oh, you don't know that. Okay, noted.
Right.
This situation, what would you do?
Yeah.
Noted. And it's hard because I had, for example, a kid that I sent up for a Sailor of the Quarter board, which we do every quarter and every year to get someone recognized. And one of the questions they asked him, they said, what do you think about the China situation? And he was like, I don't know. And I said, for you not to understand why there is turmoil or, you know, some kind of aggression, you know, between these two nations, I would say is very telling of like, we need to get you understanding because I need to know why you're fighting, what you're fighting, whatever else. And so I was like, out of respect for your time in the military, out of your time here and what we're doing, I want you, I said, I don't need you to be a geopolitical expert, but I want you to have a 5-minute synopsis of what's going on. And I sat him down and he came back to me the next day and he kind of told me some basics of that.
Yeah.
Cause before that, you know, the generation of 18 to 20 year olds right now, he was like, oh, it's because TikTok. Like, that's what he said initially before the research.
Not wrong.
Yeah. But I was like, yes. And then trying to break down, well, why is TikTok an issue? And understanding artificial intelligence and transmitting data and all these different things that he thinks are so benign. But I'm like, as someone that has, I won't go into details too much, but as someone that has had intelligence gathered on them, I can tell you that is very real. And this is a, this is when this gathering was happening, it was really preempted before these big scares or talks were happening. So I'm like, whoa, this has been happening for years, like way beyond or way before. I think even the really general public was talking about it. So I, you know, I've never been to war, but you have, but I have to tell people, I was alive during 9/11 and I saw what happened on our military base around us and how crazy it got. And, I tell the kids, I'm like, I want you to understand any day that could flick a switch and you are now being deployed and that's just what it is. And I really need to get that in your head a little bit or even take the edge off of that scare just so that if it does happen, or I'll just say when it does happen, it's not going to hurt as bad. And we can get in the gears grinding towards where are you deficient? What can we work you up on and kind of get you spun up to speed?
Hell yeah. No, so. See, that's a perfect way to look at it. Because coming up, obviously, you're in a leadership position. I feel like a lot of leaders, even senior to both of us, don't have the experience or even now what you described as the foresight of training kids for something potential. It's a lot of it's a lot of people making rank just to make rank. A lot of people, like I was, you know, at the schoolhouse today and they're like, you know, what are you making chief? I'm like, I'm not, I'm just not interested. And they're like, what, you know, you got to get that paycheck. I'm like, see, this, I hate this. You know what I mean? Like that $600 is really a fucking big deal. But, yeah, so it's just like, everybody's just like, you need to pick up rank. It's a nice little paycheck. Like, I don't give a fuck about the paycheck. I don't. Like, if you're going to make me a Navy chief, something I used to really like respect, I wanted to be because of my work ethic and my leadership abilities and the things you see in me and yada, yada, yada. But it's just, it's gone away. I don't know.
Well, let me say something that's funny. I remember when I was, we used to do payoffs or in-doc when you made the next
one.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And there was a guy that was like, hey, to somebody, like, it wasn't in my class, it was somebody else. They're like, what would you do differently, like, now that you're making the next rank? And, you know, he was hoping for some great answer. And I mm-hmm. get it from a very young person. They should think of, like, what would they do differently? And I, you know, in my position now, if someone said, what would you do differently? I'm like, not a damn thing. I'm doing it. I literally, I'm like, I don't think there's anything I'm not doing. And if the Navy decides on its big scale to finally select me for that, awesome. If it doesn't,
right.
like, I would never sit here and show up every day and be like, I'm bitter about my career, so let me just screw over
exactly,
these 20-year-olds.
Exactly. Like, dude, just wanted to get a job, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't see that. I tell people, I'm like, I'm here for legacy at this point. Like, I'm going to retire either way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm okay with that. And you know, I've made a lot of money. I've made a little money. It mm-hmm. did not indicate how happy I was.
100%.
And the $600 you're talking about,
yeah,
dude, if you're really hurting for $600, I could teach you how to make $600 in a lot of other ways. That probably would take less time away from your family or whatever else. Like, and that's not to be mean, but I'm just saying, like, I think that your priorities should be more aligned, because that stuff will happen. Rank will happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stress about it anymore. And it's funny, because I feel like me and you are in the same position where other people outside of us are more stressed for us than
we are. 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's that.
All the time I get that. Yeah. And if you're all about the Benjamins, maybe the military isn't for you.
You're right though. If you're looking for a crazy paycheck, this is not the place to be. But dude, I look at this and, you know, this is where I always come back. I got to humble myself. I'm like, I would not be where I'm at. I would not have these opportunities if I didn't do this.
Yeah.
And so I will forever be grateful for
100%.
It. I can't say enough of, like, it's, dude, the Navy saved me.
Yeah.
Saved me.
I say it all the time.
Yeah. And so there are people that I'm really interested in, like, what makes people, what motivates people. Mm. Like, when we're talking about people that are coming up through the ranks, like, what makes them? Some of them are going enlistment to enlistment because they have a child, or they have a debt, or they have this student loan, or whatever they're trying to, you know, make sure is afloat. I respect it. But, you know, I think there also has to be some level of intrinsic motivations to show up every day.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard. This is not an easy job for anybody.
No.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's something that we're not going to solve tonight at the dinner table. Unfortunately, literally, yeah.
What do you think? And I don't want to interview on this.
I know. I told you not to.
I know. But like, what do you think is really motivating this generation? Someone with your experience, like, do we still have people that are out there that are like, I want to serve my country, or like, those like intrinsic, I need to get grit, I need to get stronger, I need to get experience, I just need some. Like, I talked to a kid today that I'm friends with. He's an E5 now. He watched the videos, actually, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and I said, why'd you join? You came from such a good family. Like, they would have paid for his college, everything. He's like, I just felt like to live in this country, I needed to give something back to it. And
that's
I needed
rare.
Some experience.
That's rare.
And I was like, that is insane.
Yeah.
But very, I appreciate you.
I will say that's super rare. I will say, yeah, somebody coming off a recruiting tour, it's everybody's motivated by different things, obviously, but those like fucking patriots, they are out there. Now, granted, I recruited out in Texas, so it's a little different, but they are out there. But it's not, I think we have, it's going to start a whole conversation, I feel.
I'm sorry.
Trying to wrap here. No, it's a very good point, but we have glorified war and combat in such a gross way. And I know you agree. We've talked about this before. But going to combat just for combat's sake is such a sick thought if you really think about it. And a lot of these kids, you know, I call them David Goggins kids. They want to be tough. They want to kill the enemy, this, and that. But they're not doing it because, like, oh, I love and respect and want to protect my country. They just want to be perceived as, like, this badass. And obviously, that's a terrible fucking reason to join, but a lot of people join from that. Mm-hmm. So it's incredibly rare to find somebody who's like that E5 you just described. Like, I respect this country. I'm going to give something back. I'd say in my 3 years in recruiting, I saw maybe like 12 kids like that who are truly like, I owe this country something. It's rare, man. It is a generational thing. It definitely is. So, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to wrap up with one question, mm-hmm. and then, because we've gone on a long time. You're a good guest because you like to yap, and that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's good.
I will say, I'm going to steal this question from our mutual best friend, Zach, veteran with a sign. He ended our podcast that we did together with the same question. Mm-hmm. I think you're a good person to answer it, too. When it comes to military influencers, which is a term I hate, and I know you do, too, how do you feel... the culture of the military influencer is going now? Because I know when you first started, you talk about the old school YouTubers and stuff, and it wasn't that big a deal. Yeah. It really wasn't. It was actually kind of cool. Everyone's like, oh, we get to see a side of life that we don't get normally get to see. Now every fucking body with an iPhone is an influencer. Yep. How do you feel the culture of military influencers is today?
I think it's the most lost it's ever been. Mm. And that's not to like knock any one influencer or anything else. But I think also that's a reflection of the mission sets that people are a part of, or their whether they're the admin person or the infantry person or a corpsman or whatever else. I don't feel very community-like, which is kind of sad. And to be honest, I would like to... it did feel like a community back then because it was so, like, small, and it's like, we're just doing this for funsies, you know? But I think maybe monetary stuff has made people feel like they are doing it for the wrong reasons. So I will say it's very lost. I do feel like there are even divides within the military community. And I feel like me and you are kind of on these outlying islands a little bit. Like we have friends in the community and we have some connections, but it's not like I need to be friends with every single person.
Right, yeah.
I would like to see some driven guidance, because I think what was driving it when I first did it was education. It was how can I tell people how boot camp was? How can I tell people how their first command is going to be? How can I tell? And there was true, like, maybe it was the vehicle of them trying to get famous, but those people died out. You know, like, if you were going to do it just for clout to try and get some followers, like, those people that already fell off, which is okay. You know, it's short term. You have to love doing it. But I will go for it and say, wrap up the question you had said, what is the status of these?
Yeah. What's the pulse? How do you feel about it?
The pulse is weak. The pulse is weak. And I will say that I'd like it to be stronger. Let me give an example. Who are the next Tim Kennedys, the next David Goggins? I don't see those people coming up. I don't. And I think there's just... the credibility of military people is not going to be there. And that's why where we get to those boot camps that are the male boot camps where you have the guy that was an air winger or a logistics guy or something like that. Not trying to knock him, but
you can knock him. That's fucking nonsense.
But you see what I'm saying though, where you get this kind of lost perception of like, rah, 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 just tough to be tough.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of people, even during 9/11 and the 2000s, were kind of kicked in the teeth a little bit. Like, oh, this is real. And even talk to junior people through our years of service where they're like, oh, I can't wait to deploy. I'm like, you say that now, but be careful what you wish for, because when it happens, it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah.
And the people that were going to Iraq or Afghanistan, they were like, I'm going back. I'm here now. And I know in 6 months or whatever, I'm coming back.
Right.
I'm like, so be careful. Yep. Enjoy the fact that you get to have these intermittent times.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
But future of military influencers, I'd love to see some more unity. Yeah, that's really it.
Okay. All right. I like that. Again, we've gone on longer than I thought we would, so I appreciate it. But again, thank you for doing this. I appreciate your insight and your time. Anything else for the people? You don't plug anything or anything like that?
Follow me over on NickyMGTV on Instagram, YouTube, whatever you got that you want to follow me on. Cover news. So that's pretty much military culture, news, information. I'll be honest with you, if the way I format every video is if you just want the information, you can watch the first 75 to 80% of the video. The last half is my opinion, but I mean, I'm not going to put my opinion in the beginning of it. So, if you want to watch that, I just want to give it to you guys straight. If you care about my opinion, cool. I appreciate it. So,
all right. Love it. All right. Like and subscribe and all that stuff. I'm not a YouTuber. I'm not good at that, but
it's okay.
All right. Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Everybody else, as always, stand by for more.